Hello, everyone. This is Tom Randall, your podcast host today. I hope you're all doing really well and have got fully involved with your 2022 climbing processes and goals. You'll have noticed that we've been recently upping the frequency of the podcast. This is one of our very own Lattice New Year's aims. If you want to hear all of them, make sure you subscribe, and we really do appreciate reviews being left, especially on iTunes. In today's show, we've got Zoe Northcutt, who has a really unique story. Like many of us, they are training and progressing towards their own climbing goals, but unlike most of us, they have a brain tumor. I've personally known Zoe through our own training at Lattice. Their coach was Maddie, but also from DMs where we've sent each other, or which we've sent each other over time. The resilience and strength of this human and what they've shown has been quite unbelievable. I've meaning to get this podcast recorded for some time, and just because of things getting in the way and, you know, the usual life stuff happening, we haven't quite got round to it, but I'm really going to hope this is going to empower you. Zoe is one of those individuals who gives me and others a real zest for life. They've dealt with some real pain and trauma, but they also find a way to find joy and share that with others. Even the simple photos of some of Zoe's training sessions have given me a proper chuckle over time. I'm going to discuss with Zoe their brain tumor that's named Fred. The battles of COVID and also staying active despite the setbacks in life, and also the work that they do in amongst the LGBTQ+ community. Zoe is a queer, gender fluid climber who started a number of community initiatives, and these are all despite significant personal challenges in recent years in their local area, and seems to have almost unlimited energy for giving back. So Zoe, after that welcome, and sorry it took a little bit long there, there were so many things to go through, I'm really psyched that we finally found time to meet up and talk about some big topics.
Likewise, thanks for having me.
So let's start with Fred. I think the first thing I'm going to ask is, why have you named your brain tumor Fred? Tell me about where this all came from.
Sure. It was quite random, the name itself. It was just the first thing that popped into my mind and I went with it. But I think, you know, people have always said it's a little bit scarier if you can name the thing. And for the longest time, I didn't know what was causing all the symptoms I was having. So I was actually relieved when I was diagnosed with a brain tumor, because it was like, oh, there's a reason that I'm going through all of this. And it just felt more lighthearted to me to give it a silly name and to think about it as like somebody squatting in my brain rent-free. And, you know, I think I'm somebody who has to use humor and has to be playful to get through life. And so Fred it was.
And was that the first name that you gave your tumor?
Yeah, it was the first one that popped into my mind, and it's just stuck. And it's really funny, because a lot of times people will forget and be like, what is your tumor, John, or something? I just love hearing people, you know, try to remember and reference him. And I'm not really attached to the name, but I'm sorry to any Freds out there, but I don't have anything against them. Just was a random thing that came to my mind.
It's actually really interesting, because I find it a really, I think I just immediately think of it as being a really delicate topic, and it'd be one that I would always be cautious about talking with you about this. But just that mere naming and the, you know, just making it into more of a humorous thing almost makes that itself accessible to be able to discuss and share and talk about as a topic.
That's great to hear, actually, because yeah, I think it is an uncomfortable topic. And for whatever reason, I've had a number of really challenging things occur in my life that I find a lot of people don't know how to discuss or properly support, or, you know, just wanting to be there as a nice person, even strangers, but it's like, there's a lot of fear around it. And I think for me, a lot of my work is working on vulnerability and opening up and being genuine about what's happening with me, whether that's good or bad or both. So I think it's important to discuss these things. And I think it's like part of what connects us as humans, you know, it's not always just about all the good things that we see and we want to talk about and blast on Instagram. It's also about like the real things that make us human. And I personally believe that a huge part of what unites us as humans is suffering. Not to make it like a dark topic or anything, but I think it's just, that's just the reality of it is like struggle, right? And figuring out how do we overcome those struggles? Like that's what we do in climbing, you know, let's find something that it's a problem for a reason on a boulder. How do we navigate that? How do we figure it out? And so anyway, I just think it's good to be lighthearted. It's also good to be real and vulnerable and talk about everything, the seriousness of it.
And what's been the impact of the tumor on you in your everyday life, let alone the climbing that we'll talk about in a bit?
It's been massive. So originally I had cervical cancer. I had like a rare genetic form of cervical cancer back in 2015, and I had it removed in 2016. And I was super lucky, didn't do like radiation or anything. And so I thought, this is super simple. We'll just have this surgery and then I'm good to go. And I didn't feel better and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I actually started to feel a lot worse than when I had cancer. And basically what happened is I started to feel like I was losing my mind. I started having these crazy mood swings, anxiety and depression that I had never experienced before. You know, I think I've always had like low grade depression in my life, but this was so different. It felt like somebody had just like hijacked my body and changed who I am. And migraines that are just completely debilitating. Like I can't speak, I can't see. It's so just all these weird things started to happen to me. Massive fatigue was a big part of it. Like I used to be doing yoga 3 days a week, dance twice a week, climbing 3 or 4 days a week, and then cycling to work and back. And I went to doing maybe one of those activities and then having to sleep under my desk at work to go home and ride my bike home. And I was just like, this is insane. I was in my like mid 20s at that point and couldn't figure out what was going on. And, you know, doctors just kept being like, oh, you're just, you know, and they perceive me, I look still very femme. So I have a lot of people that are, you're just a woman, you're just hormonal, you just have anxiety or just have depression, which I don't think should ever be said that way anyways. But it took a while to find out that there was something wrong. And I just, yeah, I don't know. It was really a tricky thing to pursue because I just felt insane. Like there's something, it was such an internal process. But I did have to stop working in that time because I was so like emotionally unstable and then physically just not well enough to go to work regularly. So one of my childhood best friends offered to help pay my bills while I figured this out. And I thought it would be like a 6 month thing, you know, tops, like, cool, take a little medical sabbatical and come back. And it's turned into a much bigger challenge and adventure than I thought it would be.
So I guess this journey so far from it has involved a lot of, you know, very acute setback initially, and then a roadway filled with other setbacks and difficulties along the way. How has that looked and felt for you?
Oh man, that's such a great question. I feel like, you know, initially, I think I almost didn't accept that there was something wrong or that it would be like a big part of my life. It was like, I'll figure out what this problem is, we will diagnose it, and then I'll move on. And I just kind of put everything in my world on pause for a while and thought like, everything else goes on the back burner, including like professional development, career, figuring things out, relationships, whatever. I'm just going to focus on this thing. And in some ways that was a little bit of a problem because what I'm learning in general in life is that life just keeps going on. Things just keep happening and you have to find ways to deal with things when they're acute, but then when they become chronic, like, who are you? You know, it's like, it can kind of define who you are. And I started to feel like, I don't want to be this person with a brain tumor that is, it's not allowing me to climb or allowing me to work or to, you know, just function as a human being. And so that's something that I'm like in the process of like re-examining right now and figuring out how do I keep moving forward. So climbing was a big part of that, continuing to climb through it and making sure that I was still doing something I love. And then volunteering because I couldn't work. So it was like, okay, I still need to be involved in things and not just like, you know, at home in self-pity world. So I think that really inspired me to do things. And it was like, well, I don't really just want to do any volunteer work. Not that it's not great, I'm sure, in its own way, but I needed to do something that felt meaningful to me. So I think that's when I kind of started thinking about like, how can I like help mentor other people in climbing, or what are ways I can do that? So I'm kind of in that process again of like redefining, like, okay, I'm at a point where now I've been on supplemental hormones for almost 3 years, and we're really hoping I can wean off of them. But that process has been so brutal. And Mexico's healthcare system is just so poor, unfortunately. Like, we have great people here, but just not a lot of specialists. So I have a lot of people that sort of have an idea of how to help me, but don't really have answers. And I think that's been the most maddening thing. It's just this kind of like hurry up and wait. It takes 6 months to get in to see one doctor, and then they don't really have a lot to say. And especially around hormone therapy, that's been the hardest piece, which there's so much I could say on that. That's like its own topic, because that's something that has really led me into exploring a lot of my gender identity, even though I'm actually on estrogen and progesterone right now, which is really weird. But it's also, yeah, oh my gosh, I feel like I can't even start on that topic. That's a whole, it'll totally derail me. But yeah, so just trying to figure out kind of how do I navigate these like really big things while holding on to tangible things and like making small steps forward. And that's exactly where I'm at right now.
And when we look at things that, you know, are difficulties or setbacks, one of the things that I've often observed and watched in others, and I've tried to use this myself in my own process, is that this the ability to try and reframe things, mm-hmm. so that they, when they first occur and you sort of process them, you think of them in one way, you have this innate quick reaction to how you perceive this thing and how it affects you. But then if you can go through that process of changing what it actually, you know, means, mm-hmm. then there's an ability to be able to move forward and take action, not feel quite as pained from that occurrence. How does that, do you go through a similar kind of process, or Absolutely. Is it look very different for you?
No, it's very similar. I think for me, it was first important for me to allow myself to feel upset in any capacity that I feel, and knowing that it's going to go up and down. So maybe I like have, like I just recently saw an endocrinologist and really didn't have the conversations I hoped to have with this doctor. And I took it very personally and felt really just totally defeated and down and out about it for a while. And I let myself like go through that and then think about like, okay, but what did I really get from this? I learned this particular person cannot help me. That's it. It's just information. And just reframing it, like, it's not like I'm never gonna find the answers to this, I'm doomed forever, which is how I feel in the moment. I'm just so sick of dealing with this situation and having these like two steps forward, one back, that it can be really tiresome. And I think it's important to let myself sort of tantrum and freak out about it. And then say, okay, like pick yourself back up. How do I really wanna look at this? Because it's really easy to get trapped for me in a very like victim role, where everything is being done to me and I am stuck in this and no one can help me and no one can understand and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's something that while that might feel true from in some moments, it isn't a truth. And I think it's important to distinguish like what feelings are versus what truth is. And that's something that's been like a really important piece for me, is it's like, my feelings are valid. Yeah, you can totally feel alone and sad and no one understands and blah, blah, blah. But then what is the truth of this situation? And the truth in that example is that particular doctor cannot answer my questions. And it is really disappointing, but there are many others out there. And I have so many great resources and tools available, and what are the next steps, and sort of just moving forward through them. And I think the more I go through this cycle, the faster that gets, and the less like whining and moaning I have to do in between, okay, regroup, stand back up. And I'm hoping that that's just like a great life lesson in general, like outside of just this tumor, because there's a lot of things that are just hard and disappointing. in life. And then there's this other side of it that's like even deeper than just reframing like in a neutral way. It's like, I can also think about how awesome it is that I have this incredible community of people and loved ones in my life that are willing to help me find a different doctor, that are willing to answer my questions. And like, then when I think about that, I'm like, oh, this is really beautiful. This has turned into like this really cool thing where it's my personal struggle and I could feel alone and sad in it, but I have like 10 friends who are willing to step up to the plate and help me out. I have someone who's currently willing to pay my bills to make sure I can get through it. Like, these people clearly believe in me and that I can get through this. So yeah, I think I feel all of it. I go through all those stages.
Yeah, I always think it's a really interesting concept how the tools that we use in our everyday life, but then also the ones that we use and develop within sport often become very interchangeable. And we can take things from everyday life and move them into our sport, but then we can develop things in our sport and transfer them back into life. And I've seen that happen so many times with lots of different individuals over the years.
Oh, it's so profound, and climbing is such a good one for that for me. Like, you know, I originally started out sport climbing outdoors, and then found that it wasn't the right fit for me anymore as I started to have this like crippling anxiety and it wasn't fun, which I'm sure we can get into later on. But I think it just was interesting that then bouldering became available and like autopilates at the gym, and there were just other ways for me to match that. Like, even this off-width project that I'm doing right now at my local crag, there's so much about it that I feel is so tangible and such a direct reflection of what I'm going through physically and with this tumor, with like all these unknowns. Nobody's like climbed it or mentioned it on Mountain Project. I'm sure it's been climbed, but like nobody talks about it. Nobody wants to climb it. Like, no one's interested in this project. And so I feel like kind of wild in this, like I'm very alone in this journey, and yet I have many friends that will come out with me and support me and like, you know, give me their ideas in beta, even if they don't want to climb it. They're willing to like come out and power spot me and just like, you know, shoot the shit. And it's just like, it feels like just such a perfect example. You know, I've found like this physical way to process what's happening. And I think it sort of left me with this mantra for both climbing and my life, which is, I don't expect myself to know how, but I do expect to find out. And I like approaching both my climbing and my mental health and physical health with that of like, it's ridiculous for me to expect to just have the answers and to like know what I'm doing all the time. But it's not ridiculous to think that everything could be possible and that there are ways to do it. And that's been really helpful for me.
And how do you use those? And I know you've touched upon this already a little bit, but how do you use those around you? So, you know, partners, housemates, etc., to support you, enable you in your climbing, deal with your health. Have those been a really important part of the process? And what's that looked like in reality for you? Do you do a lot of sharing? Do you do a lot of discussion? How do you do that?
Oh yeah, I think without my community, I don't know that I would be here at all, honestly. I think it takes a whole village to raise a Zoe. Like, it's definitely a communal effort, and I feel super lucky that for whatever reason I have attracted such incredible people around me. I feel truly, truly gifted and blessed in that area of my life. So I have, you know, well, through COVID, that was a big part of it, was just having housemates and people that I live with and love and sort of like a friend family. I had a lot of struggles with my biological family growing up, and I think it was important to me to like recreate that system somehow. And so I've always managed to find just amazing friends to be around, and they've become just like family. So yeah. And then like people like Favia, who I know you know as well, she's a great example of a friend who's been so helpful for me. You know, when I was first being diagnosed with the tumor, I couldn't get a hold of my doctor to read my MRI. So I have this like MRI sitting in my email, and I don't know what it means, and I don't know how to read it. And I'm like losing it, like I have a tumor or not? What does this mean? You know, and I called Fabia, and I had only like seen her a couple times at the gym, but I just always admired her. She was like this crazy strong person and just so powerful and graceful. And, you know, I just reached out and was like, hey, I know you're a pathologist and a fellow climber, and I'm going through this situation. Is there any way you could like look at my medical stuff? And I just felt so open, like sharing my medical information with her. And she was like, yeah, I'll meet you, and sat with me at a coffee shop and went through it with me. And just, so I feel like before I even like knew her as a good friend, she showed up for me. And now I feel like, you know, I have my close friends, my girlfriend. I also have a boyfriend. So I feel like I'm just super lucky in that realm. Even the work that I do now, I work in a very small gym in Santa Fe, and that climbing community has been incredible and supportive for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it just goes without saying, and that the climbing community, oh, we're just so lucky being in it.
Most definitely.
It's just total gold, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. I think it's a really special sport in that regard. I think a lot of people, at least the climbers that I experience and choose to spend time with, really want to share that. It's like an energy that's contagious, and people, it's such an enjoyable sport, and it's something you want to do with other people. So it's just, it's exciting. I think that's one of the things I like the most about bouldering so far. It's just how communal it is. It feels even more so to me than rope climbing.
And talking about the unknowns that you were just mentioning a couple of minutes ago, was, and especially I wanted to kind of go on to the topic around, I know that the tumor that you have is, am I right in saying that it's based in or around the pituitary gland? Is that right?
Yeah, it's in my pituitary. So it's kind of like, the way I like to think about it is if you have like your pituitary being your air traffic control center for all of your endocrine function, so all of your hormones, your like thyroid, your growth hormone, all of those things like come from the pituitary, and your adrenals. So like for a while, my fight or flight was really off because my body would just be like, we're now going to blast you with a bunch of adrenaline for no reason, which is not pleasant. So anyway, if you think of that as like, okay, pituitary is your air traffic control center, and it's like dictating where all of the planes should go. And then you have this tumor that just like slaps a big blind up over one window. And so now you have like a bunch of planes wrecking, essentially. Like, oh, we don't know. Did you get enough estrogen? I don't know. I can't tell. Let's just dump some more, you know, or I think they have enough. Let's just pull it all out. So it's kind of been like this chaotic airplanes crashing in my brain is sort of how I think about it.
I like that analogy. Yeah. It probably explains to others that aren't in this situation how much of a big impact this whole thing is. And I know that you, when you were working with Maddie, you had quite a lot of discussions around, you know, the huge unknowns around your hormone levels and how you would deal that with climbing. How did you actually work around that huge degree of unknown and, you know, playing that back into the training?
Yeah, Maddie is so great. It was so cool that I just happened to get matched with her as a coach. And then she started to do all this work and like hormone therapy and research. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Because originally when I started training, I was actually kind of nervous to say that I had this brain tumor because I wasn't sure if I like wouldn't be qualified or something. I don't know. I was so afraid like they won't want to work with me. And so I was kind of nervous to tell Maddie like, well, actually, I'm glad you specialize in this because I have this brain tumor. but basically what we did is I had started hormone replacement therapy. It's more like support. It's not a total replacement, but just to give my body like a baseline of constant progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone for a while. So even if it like spikes and drops, I at least have this one consistent level going was sort of the idea. And so I explained that to Maddie, and then she basically helped me understand just the typical female athlete cycle, which is cool because it's something that I never grew up learning about, was never discussed, and figuring out like, okay, when you're in this phase, you might want to do more strength training. When you're more in like the luteal phase, you probably need a little bit more time warming up. And just having that understanding of even what it should be like for me at a baseline was so helpful. Because it was like, okay, now I know why I feel so fatigued sometimes and which part of that is maybe normal for me and which part is like, oh, this might be like a tumor symptom. Because trying to detangle that is so tricky. Like endocrine health is just such a complex thing. So I think just having like some baseline understandings of what normal was actually one of the most monumental pieces for me. And then I could kind of figure out like what is happening for me personally and what might need to shift. And just a lot of like the mentality around it of like, okay, I need to be more patient with myself during this time. Or letting her know like the migraines that I have are cyclical because they're considered menstrual migraines. So it's because of that hormone irregularity that it like goes up and then it drops really sharply, then I get a migraine. So we would know like, okay, I'm probably going to have a migraine around this time. Let's not do like a ton of strength training right then. Let's like make sure that's more of like a rest week, you know, and just structuring it in a way that we could set me up for more success rather than constantly feeling like I'm just failing. And that was huge.
That's really cool to hear that. Because I think for many people listening is that everyone has their unknowns in their life and how their body reacts and behaves when it comes to life and training and their health. And I think the thing that you had there was that you're setting yourself up to not fail. Yeah. And it's taking that slightly more proactive approach of saying, I think this could happen. I know it's still an unknown, but there's some kind of pattern in there, or if I have this scenario, I will get this response. So let's set up for that. I think that's a really good takeaway there.
Yeah. And I think just having Maddie treat me as a normal human, it was like, okay, this is just like a part of something that you experience as a person, just like any other thing that someone else might experience. Like we all have times and natural cycles and rhythms in our bodies that allow us to perform better or worse on different days, just like as part of being inherently human. You know, everybody has those high gravity days where you're like, I don't know why I can't do this problem that I just flashed yesterday. But I think just normalizing that a little bit and understanding like that failure is just information and not necessarily a negative or a setback. And then just planning around that, knowing like Maddie would give me really fun and playful sessions. Like right now she's just given me one to work on dynamic movement because that's a huge weakness of mine. I'm a very static climber. And as I've gone into bouldering, it's been like, oh man, I really need like more fast twitch muscle and I need like power. And so she'll give me things that are just a lot more playful, like eliminate a bunch of holds on an easy problem and just like going for it. And I'll film them and send them to her and we get to like have a laugh about it together. Like, okay, I lunged for something and went for it and totally failed. What do I need to do different? And it just makes the failure more playful. And I think that is something that I've been able to incorporate as well in my body kind of at large. Like, okay, the migraine, I might not be able to think of it as playful, but I can think of it as like, not like such a huge setback, you know?
I think, did you post up a video recently in your Instagram of like a double dino thing where it was actually people should, we'll leave the Instagram links in the show notes and things like that. But I think it looked like a relatively straightforward boulder problem, but you were making big long skips of all the holds.
Yep.
To, you know, 6 foot dinos and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just playing, you know, I think Maddie's been so helpful in encouraging the play side for me, which makes me want to train a lot harder and just be stronger so I can play harder, honestly.
As a queer climber, I think you would agree with me in that you've seen and experienced a lot of change in the diversity and the attitudes towards diversity in the climbing community, especially in, to me, what feels like the last 2 or 3 years or so?
Oh, definitely. I think it's really exciting. It's encouraging to see things shifting a bit. I feel like I have mixed feelings sometimes on social media, but I've actually found Instagram to be really, really helpful in a lot of ways in promoting this. You know, just seeing more people out there that are queer climbers, hashtags sort of like uniting people to see each other and encourage it. I've had people just reach out and even message me as one who's like, you know, just an average Joe climber and say like, you know, thanks so much for, you know, just wearing your cool rainbow shirt and representing queer climbing in the community and just realizing like, oh, there's more and more. We're out there. Queer climbers are out there. We've always been out there, but it's just exciting to see it represented more. And I think both on just like the day-to-day level, like people like, you know, me and anyone else versus like, you know, like seeing people like Nikki Smith and Laura Saborin and people like that, that have a little bit more of a platform. And I think that's been really empowering to see like, oh, these people can do it, that, you know, if Nikki can be a professional climber, maybe I can too. And I think that's really exciting and encouraging, and makes me personally feel like there's a place for me as a queer person in this community. So that's, it's really exciting to see.
I do agree with you that especially in the online space and social media, it's a very difficult terrain, and it can cause a lot of problems just in the nature of how it's set up and how the platforms work. But I always think one of the things that is good about it is that it seems to speed up things, and it makes change occur faster than, I mean, I feel fairly old in, you know, saying I'm 41 years old, and I experienced a reasonable, at least half of my life, you know, in either zero internet or very, very low levels of internet, and just took a lot longer to change. Whereas social media just ramps stuff up. It kind of spins it around this circle that just gets faster and faster. And that activity, I think, is a positive thing, if not very, very messy.
Yes, I would agree. It's both positive and it's messy. It sort of like highlights and amplifies to the whole world. It's like this beacon of what's been happening. But I think it's also tricky in that sometimes people can like hide behind social media and can be a little bit more vicious or willing to say things that I highly doubt they'd be willing to say in person when they're attacking. And that's really the unfortunate side of it. So it's, I feel like there's a duality, but I've of course seen growth too, just in person, like just the number of people that are coming out to our queer climbing event, seeing it in more gyms, you know, like I've been to a number of gyms in the last few years and seen that like there's several places that are doing LGBTQ climbing nights. It's not as rare anymore. And I think that's really cool.
Mm. And the question I wanted to ask you was, because this comes down to this difference between online versus in person, and, you know, the activities that you, or actions that you'll take in real life, in air quotes, versus what you'll do on your mobile phone or on your keyboard on a laptop, is what do you think are the biggest impacts that individuals can have versus communities? Because I think there's individual actions, and then I think there's community actions, and it feels to me like individual actions are often quite heavily based towards online just because the ease of access and frequency, but then in person feels like more of a community thing. I mean, you may disagree with me, but how do you feel about that?
That's a really good question. Oh my gosh, I have to be honest with you, I drank all of my tea and have to pee so bad and I don't know if I can answer that question yet because my eyeballs are floating.
Okay, this is a commercial break, everyone.
Yes.
Zoe is going for a pee. I'll play some music in the background.
Yeah, play something really great that everyone can dance to and imagine if you had to do like the pee-pee dance. And I'll be right back with an answer.
Okay, that sounds great.
Hold on.
Well, whilst Zoe has gone off for a bathroom break, I thought I might as well. Well, I think I might as well fill everyone in with a few updates with things that are going on with Lattice at the moment. So, over in the HQ in the UK in Chesterfield, that's our base, just south of Sheffield. At the moment, we have lots going on with our coach education work. So, as many of you will know, we have a real passion for educating the coaching and training community. And we're actually at the moment building an internal education program at Lattice, which will then get rolled out to all of you out there once we've finished doing that. So that's one particular exciting project that we've got going on at the moment, which will most definitely, or we hope will be an impact back into the climbing community. And then secondly, we also have a digital critical force program, which is going on at the moment. So if you follow along with our social media and keep in touch with that, we have lots of interesting stuff coming out on critical force testing, originally headed up on our side of things by Dr. Dave Giles. So have a check of that. But I've got Zoe back.
Thank you. I was like, this is such a great question. And it's really, really hard to think about when you have to pee.
Yeah, sorry. I just did a little sort of advert break whilst you were off in the bathroom. So I'll let you come back with your answer now.
Yes. Thank you. And I think I want to preface this with saying that, I felt really nervous kind of talking to you about some of these things, only because I think sometimes it can feel like really hard to represent an entire community as an individual. And so I think, everybody's experiences are different and valid. And I just wanted to state that sort of like, I can only speak from my experience, obviously. So in terms of individual versus community action, it's such a good question. I feel like, man, individual actions can be so big. But I think, we see a lot of that in social media and things online. But honestly, like even little things, like I've seen, people wearing pronoun pins that are cis hetero people that are just wanting to be supportive, that are willing to do that. Like it could be something that small that matters. I think it can also be like asking people when you introduce yourself, saying like, I'm Zoe Northcutt, my pronouns are they, them. That's easy for me because that's not a usual pronoun to use. And so it's something that feels sort of important to me to state. But when I see other people doing that, whatever their pronouns are, it makes it feel a lot less weird to be the one person that has this pronoun pin or the one person that has to introduce yourself a certain way. So I think individuals can really help in that way to just sort of normalize things. And then I think community stuff can be, just what we're doing right now is a great example of it. Like, Lattice is so great. You've sort of like taken social media by storm and for good reason. I think the work that you guys are doing both with training and with the community is incredible. And so I think doing things like this where you've, and I know I'm like not the first queer person you've talked to at all, but I think just making that space available for people is huge. And just giving people a place to use their voice and talk about their experiences, whether that is specifically about being a queer person or whether that's just like, this just happens to be a queer person and this is a normal topic. I think both things are really important. I don't know if you could say that like one really outweighs the other, or I think it's all just super important to be able to do. And I think the nice thing about the social media aspect is that it's like you said, it's sort of just like this beacon that like, everyone has access to and can see. But it still matters, even if nobody's seeing it. Just those like individual interactions, I think, are just very touching and important. Like for me personally, for example, there's a guy that I work with, Josh, who's this like really sweet 17-year-old boy. And, he'll call me dude and bro because he knows that I like more masculine terms and things. And I don't know where he learned that from. I didn't tell him that. But somebody else in my community must have said, you know, Zoe uses they, them, and they're a little bit more masculine and they like being called things like that. And so someone else took that initiative. And that's huge. That like makes my day and makes me feel so much more comfortable when I'm around him at work. So yeah, I think those individual things actually matter quite a bit.
And what things give you hope for the coming year on this particular topic? And you know, what excites you about that's going on at the moment? And you see development within either the, you know, the community, the queer community itself, or within the climbing community?
Yeah, in the climbing community specifically, I've been excited to see more programs that are doing sponsorship and things, or just involvement for like mentorship. Like I know last year Scarpa did one for LGBTQ plus climbers. And I think that's really exciting to see that there's more programs, because climbing especially is such a sport that is learned through mentorship. You know, everyone that I know has like had a friend that takes you out and teaches you things and sort of helps you get sucked into it. And I think just having programs available both for people who want to mentor and mentees, you know, and just roles for queer folks to sort of, you know, integrate into the community. That makes me really excited to see more of that. And just like we talked about before with the gyms, having more, you know, community climb nights that are queer focused. And then just in the communities at large, like I'm so impressed by Zoomers, the next generation. I'm just like floored at how open-minded they are and how much it just doesn't seem like it's such a battle. Like a lot of these discussions that I have with people, there's sometimes a little bit of pushback and like, you know, well, I'm not like that, I don't understand. And I think as a queer person, I wanna be very flexible and give people time to sort of wrap their minds around these differences. Which is a whole nother topic. But I think with Zoomers, it's amazing. Like I have some kids, for example, I'm coaching right now that are probably like 8 to 12. And someone had said like, let's split the team into boys versus girls. And that's like something that I'm really trying to move away from with these kids, because it's just not really a great way to divide the team. And it can be really uncomfortable for someone like me who's non-binary, and I'm positive there's gotta be other non-binary kids in this group. And so I said, you know, well, I don't really like that, because where would I fit in? I'm not a boy or a girl. And like most of the kids didn't even bat an eye. They were like, oh yeah, okay. You know, and then one of the kids was like, yeah, me either. And it was like, oh, cool. And so it's like, it's just not like an issue with them. Like when I told them like, I use they, them, they're like, cool. It's just sort of like, there's no discussion, no pushback, no anything, just like, got it, right. And they just move forward. And it's like, that really excites me, seeing that in these generations, that there's just no, they don't bat an eye. So yeah, that makes me feel really excited.
Oh, amazing. Well, so it's been just so cool to get to chat to you today. And knowing both me and you, we probably could just do like triple the length of this if we started drinking too many cups of tea or going off on random tangents. Yeah, thank you so much. And I want to just get a note from you on where people can find you online, because I know that you use Instagram, or if there's anywhere else as well that you prefer people follow what you're up to.
Yeah, Instagram is great. That's probably the only social media that I really use. And my handle is zclippin for Zoe Clippin. And, you know, it's just a cute joke. So, yeah, I'm on there. Or if you're in New Mexico and want to come to a Rainbow Senders or a Trans Senders night, we have that. Or up in Santa Fe, I now run one there as well. So, you know, if you're somewhere nearby, come and actually join in person. One day we'll get you out here, Tom.
I know, I was so close last time. I will find you next time.
Yes, and we'll get you some rainbow leggings and everything. It'll be great.
I have to say, I've already got them.
Yes. Oh, I should have known. That's so great.
I should have worn them this evening, and then you'd be like, yes.
I'd be jealous. I don't even own a pair.
I'll send you a photo later, and I'll let you know where you get them from.
Perfect. That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, lovely speaking to you, and I'm sure we'll chat again very soon.
That sounds great.